Welcome, welcome to the Encourage Project. I'm Amy Fairchild. And I was looking at the calendar today and I realized we are a year into this whole pandemic experience. And here in the United States, I live in Arkansas. Things here in Arkansas are starting to open up. And in the last couple of weeks, I've seen folks in person, distanced still, but in person. It's kind of funny. This question has come up a couple of times. Well, what have you done with the last year? And I don't know about you, but that question just feels so weird to me. It's like, were we all on one big vacation over the last year or something? And it just felt weird to me. And I want to talk a little bit about that. Before I do, though, I want to say, if you are an essential worker and you know who you are, you did heroic things over the last year just by showing up. And I want to say thank you. So thank you for that. But if you're like the majority of us, if you're like I am, you might have done some things that you wanted to do with your reprioritized time, but most likely you did things that, frankly, you never imagined you would do, much less have to learn. Things like you might have learned how to work from home, or unfortunately, you may have had to deal with unemployment and job loss. You know, many of us had to learn, not myself, but a lot of my friends had to learn how to facilitate virtual education for their kids. Maybe you learned how to do meal planning and changing your shopping habits because you couldn't just run to the store every other day and grab something. We all learned how to socialize and maintain relationships in different and new ways. And the vast majority of us were forced to cope with being physically disconnected from others. And so today I want to encourage you, before we do anything else, if you have made it through the last year, whole and relatively unscathed, you have done enough. You've succeeded, and it's something to celebrate. So yippee. Maybe one of the things you started to enjoy over this last year was this podcast. And if that's the case, leave a review, you know, leave us some comments. Let us know what we're doing well. Let us know what you enjoy. And further, share it with others and invite others into the community. I would be so grateful. So without further ado, today's guest really helps other people shine through communication. You know, we were talking before we started, and I realized this morning that I met Hillary almost 10 years ago through our membership in the National Speakers Association. And I have to tell you, I was instantly captivated by her. She's just one of those wonderful humans who radiates joy and energy. Hillary Blair is a keynote speaker, reframer of executive presence, and the CEO and lead coach for Articulate, Real, and Clear. And that company is based in Denver, Colorado, USA. Hillary's years as a teacher, stage, film, and voiceover actor really present a unique skill set. You know, she is able to see beyond habits and learn behaviors to what is truly unique and authentic in groups and individuals. You know, she facilitates workshops to heighten executive presence. She helps people strengthen their leadership skills and deepen interpersonal communication. And y'all, she's got the meat to back it up. You know, she is obviously a wonderful human, and she also is a certified speaking professional. She is a member of VASTA, which is the Voice and Speech Trainers Association, and she's a certified conversational intelligence facilitator, which I find fascinating, and I want to hear more about that. She holds a master's of fine arts in acting from the National Theater Conservatory, and she has a bachelor's from Yale University. Now, if that's not enough to get you excited, I know her personality will. So without further ado, here's my friend, Hillary Blair. Welcome.
I want you with me all the time, Amy.
Thank you. Thank
you. You're welcome. I'm so excited to hear really about how you kind of began this whole journey of Articulate, Real, and Clear. Tell us a little bit about maybe what you studied in your life before that, and what prompted you to bring that service and that experience to other people?
It has always been others that have guided me. It has been mentors and angels and amazing visionaries who have pointed my way as I've gone. And that has happened time and time again. From early childhood, when I had always been drawn to theater as an actor, and I was not outgoing. I was terribly shy. And the stage gave me a place to have a voice. And that has been a running theme. the more outgoing element that I bring to the world now, even though still an introvert, that comfort with being uncomfortable came through a high school tour that I was cast in for 4 years and then helped co-direct for 7 years after that, called Living History. And that was all about honoring others by making sure we're creating the space for their voices to be heard, in particular, high school students who usually are taught what we as adults want them to say. That's how they succeed. And what we were working on is, yeah, great, great idea. And what do you feel about this? What do you think about this? It was this really amazing program. All along the way, when I was about 15, I got cast as Anne Frank, which was a turning point from my view as theater as performative to theater as transformative. And I was terribly shy, and someone suggested I come in, and it was in a small town that had a pretty intense base of theater people who escaped there for the winter. So you wouldn't necessarily cast me right away as Anne Frank for a number of reasons, and visually, my background, all kinds of things. But the essence of who I was is who my director saw. That sense of, I see that there, and that playing that role, it was great casting. So how do we do that in business? How do we do that in this corporate world now? Is how do I bring those theater techniques, that vision? So she saw that. I played Anne Frank, transformed me. The show is transformative for the whole cast. And it's where I shifted to recognize that for me, what's important about theater and about process is what we're going through on the journey as the people in it. So the actors in a play, how are they transformed? Versus many people, and rightly so, are thinking about what is the audience receiving? So it's really where we started to see, okay, she's going to be a coach, teacher, facilitator, because it's about that process thing. And that is where I noticed a man was cast in one of the small roles, and his name was Marty Zusel, and he was playing Mr. Van Dusel, I get those names all confused. Anyway, I should have prepped that before I came on. Anyway, if you know the play and the history, like that role, and he was really, really shy, and this woman brought him from the community. So there was always a combination of professionals and community. And I watched him transform. So he was that lens through which I saw the possibility of what theater and the technique and the discipline of theater can do, which is reveal who the person is. It didn't change him. It allowed him to be who he was. And then together we were all telling this story. So that journey with Anne Frank and realizing that teacher coach was in me, that's what brought me through college and then into New York City. And then later on, a similar thing happened again to lead into this business, which is I was in a children's show. I was playing a tomato in Tomato Plant Girl. A woman, major professional, came through the line shaking hands after. And she asked if I worked with business people. I, of course, was like, I'm a tomato. Like in my head, I'm like, I'm a tomato. And it was it's a really amazing play called Tomato Plant Girl. So I said, she handed me her card. She actually tucked it into my costume, said, call me when you've worked with more. I went back to the Denver Center for the Performing Arts where I was working and part of the whole faculty there where I had done the living history work with the high school students. And I went back there and of course people started calling. Do you work with business people? Yes. Started working with them, learning, trial and error. Don't, drama teacher, start a class, lie on the floor, let's relax, we'll breathe. Do not do that with business people. Not as successful. So recognizing different processes for different people in order to get to what they need. How do we create a space where they can be part of the process and they can be revealed? Flew to New York, auditioned, quote unquote, auditioned for her and became a pitch coach for her program called Make Mine a $1 Million Business, Count Me In for Women's Economic Independence. So I spent the next 7 years crisscrossing the country, coaching business women on their pitches and getting rid of the huge chip on my shoulder. I had a huge chip of like business people are money grubbing evil humans, right? Because I was such an artist, right? Oh yeah, all bad. And got rid of that and replaced it with this real admiration for who business people, who they are, and started to see the similarity. Business people and artists, we all are driven by passion. We have vision. the main difference, Amy. Business people track and measure. And I think artists can learn from that. So I was still at the theater at that time. And finally, through the encouragement of another woman in my life, younger, one of those mentors who's younger, said, "Why aren't you running your own business?" And finally, I did. So from a woman seeing I should play a role to a woman telling me that there's more to it. And I have other people, like one woman said, "You're more than an actor," this speech coach I was working with. She goes, "You're more than an actor. You have more gifts than that." And then to this woman saying, "Why aren't you running your own company?" And so 10 years ago, aligning with my Amy meeting, I co-founded Articulate Real and Clear. Real communication is an art. And you know, what's also interesting is that that tagline was shifted by someone else, hearing someone else. This is my theme too, is you really need to listen to the mentors in the community. It was Articulate Real and Clear. Clear communication is an art because it has two C's, right? Who doesn't like alliteration? So I was like, clear communication is an art. And then I was speaking with one of our clients and another professionally said, "I don't know, that doesn't really align with what you do. I think you're more like real communication is an art." And I said, "You're right." And we changed our tagline because of him. So listening, and when things resonate, going, yes. And it's risky. I mean, it all along the way, it was fearful. I was a little kid, a young teen, whatever, terrified to go into this audition. My father, actually, they cast him in the play because I was too scared to play the role.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Yep.
Yeah. So there's a ton. I love that you asked sort of the origin story. And when I was reflecting on what you do, that whole idea of dreams and really igniting action, I was like, oh, I love your website, Amy. I just love it. And it gave me a framework to think of my own story and seeing who are the Amys in my life all along the way who got me to where I am.
Oh, I love that. There's so many things I love about your story. The one that stood out the most to me, because it came to my brain several times as you were speaking, was listening to input and suggestion and idea. I think one of the things that I hear from folks frequently when they're starting human projects, particularly something that they hadn't ever really considered, whether it's starting a business or what have you, and I think it's fairly common, there is this notion that, well, I have to know everything before I start. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how you overcame that and how you addressed that, because you've started new things several times, as you just said. How did you deal with the fear or the notion that you might have to know everything before you started?
That's the facilitator mindset, I think, and the community mindset. So the facilitator mindset is that we are moving the knowledge in the room and understanding that the knowledge is in the room. So when we're teaching something, we are the one who we throw out an idea. And then if we are coaching, then we're coaching that idea. And then we're facilitating the knowledge around it. So if we're moving constantly as a business owner, as a person blueprinting our own life as we move through, if we keep thinking there are little pieces that I know, and then when I throw them out, we deepen them, and then we move the knowledge base around that. I think a lot of it was that, I mean, I think it's from early on that we always had new teachers coming in. And as a child actor, we were trained to teach and act. That teaching it was how it deepened for us. So the recognition that teaching was, yes, sharing something, and it was about learning. And this is kind of coming to me now, is that Mary Payne, this amazing mentor in my life, that she wanted us always immediately trying to share what we had learned. And I realize now, if we think about that, then she's then putting us back in the learning mode, even though we're being the teacher. So I think that frame of mind has always been there. And then when I became part of Count Me In, the Make Mine a Million Dollar Business with the pitching, I didn't know anything. I knew a tiny slice of what was going on. I had to go to every panel and every speech and every event in order to learn the vocabulary of business, because I didn't know the language. And I was coaching these women and I would say very clearly, "Hey, help me with that." So if I have this tiny slice, recognizing it's a slice, and that I can ask, "Hey, what's that word mean? How do I connect to that? Where can I find more information?" Actors are curious people. We are asked to always ask questions and to connect in with that. What do we know inside? What do we need to learn outside? I think it's been through my whole life. I think that's part of it. I know that my father always instilled in me that true knowledge is when you admit you don't know something.
Yes.
That was instilled in me very young. It's like admitting that, you know, I actually don't know that. There's a privilege to that though, also, which there's a privilege to being able to be in a spot where you can say, I don't know. And I want to acknowledge that I recognize that too. So that is not, there are places where people don't feel that that will be received in the way that it should be. I mean, to be silly, right? A doctor in an operating room, you don't necessarily want, you know, her to say, him to say, yeah, but maybe there'll be people around to it. Yeah. So recognizing that, that frame that you asked about, why I am constantly asking and seeking, reading, learning more and tweaking and adjusting how I see and feel. We have to be at the beginning of all my workshops. Now I say, all right, I need you to be an ally and an advocate for me. So I'm going to be speaking and the world is changing. If I bump into an unconscious bias and I'm unaware of with my language, language is shifting. You've got to help me out. Put it in the chat. Let me know. Help me learn along the way. And by that, I'm having you also be aware that it's okay. And you don't have to shut it down. Invite me into the learning. And I put that at the top of my workshops.
That's absolutely brilliant. That right there, that nugget right there is absolutely brilliant. It is. I never considered starting facilitation. And I say it very differently. And I love the way you said it, though, because I never considered it as an invitation. I considered it as kind of giving people license. But it is more than that. It's more than giving people license. It's inviting them to actually actively participate and make those ideas and learnings and suggestions available. I love that.
Yeah. And we have to learn together. And me as older, privileged white woman, all those things that I know I am, right? And then it's like, I'm going to miss a lot. And as much as I have work hard on it and try and figure out what I'm missing and work on my language and have conversations, I'm definitely going to step in it.
Yeah.
Tell me.
I love it. I think one of the things that strikes me too is that, and you said it, you're very fortunate that you were taught at a relatively early age that it's okay not to know everything and that asking and learning is part of the process. There are a lot of people who weren't necessarily taught that lesson early. And so they're either having to create awareness now and learn it now. And as we get older, it is a little more challenging for us to learn things because of all of our conditioning and biases and what have you. What would be one tip or one piece of guidance you would give someone who's just starting on that journey to feeling more comfortable not knowing all the answers? Where would a person just start? What could they do today?
I think the first reframe is, I think we put a lot of weight on being comfortable. And I think we equate comfort with confidence. And I think they're really different things. So my first thing for you is to gift yourself the fact that you're confident. And then gift yourself with the fact that you can be uncomfortable and get comfortable being uncomfortable. So that's the main thing is you are confident. And I have a lot of colleagues who I love dearly who do a lot of work on building people's confidence. And I come at it from a different angle from years of doing this. I'm really big into saying you are confident. Side note, yes, there are things that ding our confidence. And yes, there are things going on. And yes, and I think we use a broad sweeping thing and we undermine ourselves by saying, I don't have confidence or I lost my confidence versus saying, whoo, this is awkward and just allowing things to be awkward. The second one that's connected with that for me is to set your boundaries of what you are feeling uncomfortable enough to receive. So what I mean is that our culture, and I just wrote an article on this. I feel like our culture, business and everything, all of our world is based on how to train people to give feedback. And we don't do the other side. How do we train ourselves to receive feedback? And how do we train ourselves to have the control of the situation? So it's all about how do you give it and how can they receive it? And we're like, hey, hold on. How about we say, what do we do when we're receiving it? So when you're asking for feedback, know whether you're asking for acknowledgement or affirmation, whether you're actually asking for input or if you're asking for a decision, like, does this work or this work? Be aware of what you're asking for. And if you're truly asking openly for information, then be ready. And the other is to say, you can put boundaries on it. Hey, I'd love one or two things that you found work. So give the feedback. You just saw me working with a team. You just saw what I do. You heard my pitch. You know what I'm doing. What's one thing you would suggest I shift? It's really helpful to give guidelines to the giver, and it's really helpful for you to recognize what you're able to receive. And you can even do this. You know what? I'm in this state right now. Could you type that up? Would you, or could I remind you in a little while? Could you send it to me by email? We get to control how we receive the information. And too often we feel like we just have to stand there and take it. Those are my two big things. And I'm kind of my little soapbox right now. I always have soapboxes. I carry them around. And the one I have right now, what used to be the confidence one. And now my new soapbox is defining how you receive your feedback, your boundaries are under your control, and it makes it easier to hear what you're going to hear.
Oh, I love that soapbox. You can get on that one anytime. I love it. I was talking with someone recently, specifically about feedback in interpersonal, like friendship relationship. And she said, you know, you ask for my opinion, but you don't take it. And I said, no, let me clarify. When I ask your opinion, I'm asking you for one thing and you give me 15 and I get a little overwhelmed by the 15. So if you'll give me the one and let me go process the one, I'll probably come back and ask you for another. So it's not that I'm listening. It's you gave me too much.
Yep. So you get to define that, right?
Yes.
I was working with a professional and they, professional setting, and they had this presentation. They were so frustrated. They go, every time I start this presentation, people just start giving me ideas. And I said, let's listen to what you said. You said, I want to hear your feedback. Here are some ideas. So you said, I want to hear your feedback. And you start going through. They actually think they are playing the game with you. And I said, what do you want? I just need them to choose A or B. Great. Probably say that first. I need your input, whether you want A or B. And I'll run through them. And at the end, I'm going to find out which one you think works. And she went, oh, and so now she's been doing that. She said, yeah. So we unwittingly invite more. And I think it's part of our culture. I think we have designed it that we think we should just be ready to take it all in. The other side of that is I want to make sure that I vouch for the actor and the sports people in the world, that there's also a real sense in the arts world and especially in the performative world where we're working together and in the sports world on a team, that feedback is invited because it's towards the end goal.
Mm.
In the business and corporate world, it can feel like feedback is whether I get to keep my job or not. We've lost the idea that it's a co-creative process. So what you're saying is, yes, I need to hear one and I'll go implement it. If you agree with it, you might not. Like the other thing is you don't have to agree with her, right? Or you could go, I'm going to go try it on. Let me see what I think. And then I'll come back for more. And recognizing that attitude is like, you take feedback well. I go, yeah, because I'm an actor. It's like, what do you got? What are we doing? And we don't go private. It's not like the director goes and sits with each actor privately to give them their feedback. It's in front of everyone. That's not shaming. It's not horrifying. And we've created this really separate world where you meet, you get your one-on-one feedback. No one else knows what's going on. So then you have a leader who no one knows if they're really giving the correct feedback to people. And I have been someone who tried to bridge that world of the performative world and feedback with business with some people who are not familiar with that. And I didn't handle it as well. I learned a lot of lessons from it. I didn't prime it as well. I don't think I understood how viscerally programmed the give me my feedback in private was. Like I was like, wow, you know, any sports team, and I know people don't like sports analogies. I do, and I'm an actor. I think sports are phenomenal. I think that mindset, and that's a part of who we are. Not everyone, if we can see it for not the money and franchise, but see it for the art form that it is, I think it's important, and the sense of being part of a team. That ability to watch someone else receive feedback and then adjust it in a play, in a chorus, in whatever art, see it happen in their art, see it happen on a sports field. That is magic. If I'm not seeing a fellow business person get feedback and they're adjusting, how am I learning from them? Why is that privacy? And I think that there's a sense that people are getting worked on versus the fact that we are coming together to make the best product at the end or win a game or score a goal or yes. So there we go. You asked the thing about, yep. And this is me. That's my squirrel brain. Away it goes.
It's perfect. And what became clear to me, the aha that I just had is because I come from a very long line of corporate work, feedback and outcome are so closely tied. And that may be why it is difficult for folks to open up the feedback observance, if you will, Because in the corporate world, we tie feedback to, you're going to produce this outcome, and this feedback is only for that outcome. And my compensation and my benefits are tied to the outcome as well. Therefore, feedback is tied to compensation. And if we could disconnect those, wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah. Or can the outcome be bigger than the one person? So if I'm getting feedback as a goalie, and if I'm getting private feedback about whether what goals I let go by, if instead it's about the game and winning, and that my goal, I'm being critiqued on, and I'm just using this as an example, right? That I'm being critiqued on that, or me as a performer, or hitting a note in choir, or whatever it is. If yes, it's my individual performance, and how does that impact the overall? Then we see each other working together and moving together versus alone. And yes, is it easier to receive feedback? Is it easier for the goalie to receive feedback? You know, I don't know, where were your hands? What up? That, yes, privately, of course, they're going to want that alone. They're not going to want, and it's about the team. So yeah. And you do have so much experience there. You people can't see, but I can see your hands. You had one hand like making a little package and the other hand making a little package. And it was like a one-to-one. And I wanted to expand the one to the bigger project. So now my hand, that's the outcome, just went boom, bigger with a spread hand, so that the me as individual impacts bigger. Maybe we can change the whole business and corporate world. What do you say? Let's just do it.
We're done.
That's what we're working on.
That's right. So shifting gears just a little bit, because Now I may have to go journal a little bit after this, because My brain is on fire as a result of that conversation, frankly. And it's a wonderful thing. One of the things that I often work with people on in human projects is going through some of the exploration without sacrificing forward momentum. And particularly as an actor and a creative person, I'm making an assumption because I was in that world a long time ago, but haven't been forever. It can be easy as a creative person to feel like you have to explore every single thing, and you're not doing yourself a service if you focus on one thing and move it forward. Talk a little bit about that, because I think there are a lot of people who feel like if they don't explore everything, they can't explore anything in their human projects. How do you facilitate that? And how would you encourage someone to have both? You can do both. How would you do that?
And let me make sure, and please I call it border collie, just like do a little bark if I'm going off, like the, woof, bring me back in. All right. If I'm going off here. So I immediately went to yes anding of improv. So you said, how do we have forward momentum? And remembering that yes and is often misused, as in any of the little memes that we see, they get misinterpreted. There's so much depth to yes and. And yes and is not agreeing. Yes and is acknowledging. And so the forward momentum of acknowledging is an interesting thing versus the stopping of a no. Though, if I'm just talking now about the border collie and the barking to refocus, there can be a, wait, we're going off. Let's bring us back in. Where do we need to be? And how do we keep that yes and momentum moving us forward, exploring side tangents as we need, as long as we recognize it's a tangent connected to our main flow, and then making an intentional, artists are very intentional. Explore, 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 and then intentional. Where do I feel it? Where am I connected? I was on this main flow. I've taken this tangent. The tangent actually is now my main flow. How do I move there? That idea of, okay, what element? And then maybe it may come back. I'm a very visual person, so I'm seeing this flow happening, and the main thing may go on. It may hold for a while. I go explore this and come back at some point. I would say that's what happened to me with, I needed to go fully explore being a professional actor. I had had in my childhood someone always saying, and when we were in a class, and she was an amazing teacher, she's a phenomenal woman, she's a great mentor. And she would always say, well, I could have made it if. And I swore I would never be that acting teacher, that trainer, coach person who was like, well, I could have made it if. I wanted to be sure that I wanted to be where I was. So I needed to pursue professional acting until I was sure that's not what I wanted to do. So during that tangent with a goal, it brought me back to very, very focused. When I stopped saying I wanted to be on stage, I mean, now I'm a speaker, so it could be that, but when I stopped wanting to be in plays and that I was like, I was more driven and more empowered by coaching others to be better on stage, to be better in their presentation and connection. This is before I became all business oriented, that I had explored that. So I didn't say, oh, I can't do that. I need to be that practical brain. I went that way and let it happen. The other element from what you asked me was doing all of the pieces of it. It's not the wording you use, but that idea of all of it. And I was like, one of the things about, I mean, me, people are going to be saying, don't let that woman come back and talk about sports. So about sports and about theater and the arts is that even if you're in a one-woman show, there's a whole team involved. So recognizing what are my skills and what are the skills of those around me and what can I do and what do I need other people to do? These are two different things. I recognize that. And they're connected for me, is that allowing myself to explore the different tangential items, trusting my gut, not my head. My head can analyze after my gut or my instinct and heart have weighed in and then go, okay, what's that value? What are we thinking there? Because it can be, is there a financial future there? We do have to live in the world. I mean, there's the world we want to live in and there's the world we do live in, right? And so that recognition that I might need my head to come in and say, yes, I'd love to sit on a rock by a stream and write words all day long. And that might or might not lead to, and so how do I, so the head has to come in and guide some of that. And same with the acting, for me to assess, do I have what it is to be professional? I went voiceover, I did that. I had a career, a good career doing voiceover, and it supplemented my, what I used to call my teaching habit. I just love teaching and coaching. And the idea that I was always partnered and paired with people who had other areas of expertise and other areas to bring in their knowledge. So community comes back in with exploring and seeing other people doing things. I can't help but looking around. I'm like looking in my space and thinking of all the different people and the different journeys. Am I hitting it somewhat, Amy?
Yes, okay. It's perfect. And the next question I would ask is, you have mentioned several times people who have mentored you throughout your journey. And also you've mentioned in different ways, surrounding yourself with people who have complementary skill sets or talents. Talk about how that has played into your success in developing your business, perhaps as an example, and how you are comfortable not knowing everything and supplementing with those people and resources.
I think that there is a comfort and a discomfort that live together with recognizing that you don't know everything. It's like, okay, I don't, which is a relief. I'm being honest with myself. And that person does have that knowledge. And can I play with them? Can I give up that power, that control? Can I move well with them and have that dance happen? And that's a lot of casting. We call it casting, right? So who are those people? I co-own the business with my partner, and we have very, very different skill sets and very, very different views of the world, which is wonderful for that perspective. It can grind to like, okay, wait, what? And that, if we're thinking in the world, right, that grinding, that grit is where pearls come from. So that's a big thing for me, is finding the treasures in the hard moments. And that note there, I have a really wonderful healer mentor in my life who has been helping me reframe, because people would get upset with me because I ruminate on my last coaching, presenting gig, that feedback we got. People like, you shouldn't take it all so personally. And I never had the language for that. And the language now is, I'm ruminating usually means in a negative way, but I am processing, because whether I agree or not, there's a lesson, there's a treasure in there. And what can I get? What can I pull to make myself more effective in the world, instead of spending my energy defending myself and why that's not right? I can get a treasure from feedback I don't agree with, right? I can be like, yes, I don't agree with that. And what's the treasure there? So that idea of those are contrary voices in my life, right? And how do I work together? When I co-founded Articulate, one of our early mentors said, you've got to have variety. Make sure you don't just hire theater people. And we followed that. And from that, I learned some pretty hard lessons, because now we are back to all theater people. And for me, in theater and performance people. So performance people have an incredible work ethic. And here's the thing, performance people are diverse. It would be like saying don't hire only MBAs for your, you know, your business consulting firm. You're like, well, wouldn't we? Because they're not diverse enough. They are totally diverse. So it was an understanding to your point of what that means even. What does it mean that we have people who, yes, have a similar goal, but it's not like we are all, I don't know, we're not even all like singing soprano in something, right? It's not that we have all these different tech positions and stage managers, totally different from performers, and an understanding of what my business needed. I had initially gut instinct thought I wanted to only be performers. And I do take in information and I go, okay, I don't know much about business. I'm going to trust this person. And it was a great lesson because now I'm even stronger in it. It took a while to learn because you get people on board and that diversity in who we work with, I'm really big on, and it's pretty major adage in the running a business, the entrepreneurial world, is figure out what you're best at and hire out all the other, even if it's people to cook for you or clean for you. And that kind of thing that can seem like, oh, preparing meals. I have one woman who finally said it took me years to realize I would be healthier and better for my family if I was not the one cooking. And I know there's some traditional stuff there, and it wasn't that she was a woman. It was just that that felt like money going the wrong way, right? And it tends to be, for me with my team, is recognizing even little things they do better. And it can be even in my sphere of excellence, right? In my sphere of excellence, I can have one of my coaches mention something. I think in your presentation, I think in how you're facilitating, this might work better. Yes. Yes. How do we allow space for that? It doesn't diminish me to yes and her. It doesn't diminish my skill and my 3,000 years of experience and to continue to credit her. You know, we never did that. We now have that as part of our presentation. We put that first because, you know, this was mentioned. It's like, yes. And I can give it, Courtney was the one who mentioned that. Like, that's something I'm thinking of right now. She mentions, yes, we want that moving forward. And acknowledging that makes us all stronger. And at some place, at some point along the line, maybe the lead sled dog is replaced, right? And it doesn't leave my wisdom anywhere else. I've been training people with me. And it's not always easy. We're ego-filled human beings. And does it make me less than? And that is where the introspection, the reflection is super important. And I know you're big into that. And I want to honor that as something I feel is super important. This past year, 2020, almost all my blogs have been reflection as a leader. I confused leading with coaching, and I need to know that I'm a coach and a teacher. And when I'm a coach and a teacher, I am all about, I see your amazing potential and I can help get you out of your own way to get there. As a leader of a business, that's not necessarily fair to the company nor to the fellow employees. I can't be so committed to you getting somewhere that you're destroying us along the way. And I wrote an article called Hugging the Washing Machine. And what I meant by that was when the washing machine is off balance, you have to unplug it and reorganize things inside, or now washing machines do it themselves. But the idea being that I was trying to hug the washing machine, that was the teacher coach in me, and I was being slammed against the wall and bruising me, and we were getting nowhere. And that is me completely misunderstanding the role of a leader as different from the role of the coach. As a leader, I needed to stop the washing machine and jettison the wet towel that was totally unbalancing things, and or bring it out, rearrange. And then I say, and if you have a good onboarding program, you're less likely to have a washing machine go out of balance. So that's the idea of really putting people in the right order in the beginning.
I love that so much.
So yeah. So all of these ideas of what are our roles and what's even the different roles within ourselves, right? Is that I needed to see I was playing multiple roles, and because there's so much talk of you're working with leaders to be better coaches. It's a totally different use of the metaphor that, because a lot of leaders are just telling people what to do and you need to coach more. It's really different than telling a coach, you got to help them. You're a coach. You need to lead more. And I was like, it was a duh. I have duhs and ahas all my time. Like, oh my gosh. Sorry, team, figuring it out. And I'm very transparent with my team. Here's my lesson. Here's what I learned all the time.
You find that transparency in particular builds things that would be difficult to build otherwise, like trust and engagement and collaboration and those kinds of things?
I think transparency is huge. And I think as a leader, it's different vulnerability and transparency don't mean everything. They mean vulnerability, we believe, is about my work on myself. It doesn't mean I need to be vulnerable with everything with you. Availability is that choice. So, and I just did another discussion with someone about the difference between vulnerability and availability. And that transparency for me is the tool that allows us to reveal our availability or our vulnerability. And transparency is a way of helping people correct the story. Very obviously in the virtual world, if I have my little box and I know people can't see us right now, but even to, you know, for people to know, I can be transparent. I'm in my home office. You might hear a dog bark, right? That kind of thing. I don't have to overshare. I can, or if something makes a sound, I can say, hey, you know, something just fell down. So you don't have to put story on. I'm being transparent about what's going on. And transparency can also be about emotions. Wow, I'm feeling myself heightened about this right now, that transparency. Then you see that I'm self-aware and I own it. It creates a safer environment. The thing about transparency and as a leader, which I have learned somewhat the hard way because of as an actor, you're like, share everything, is the idea of building trust. There are some things that are, I can build trust more by not sharing, not hiding. But I don't need necessarily to share with my team through a pandemic everything I'm worried about. I can be transparent about some of them. There are things that will just burden them. And also then they're like, what role are they in? So recognizing my role and my position, and it's burdensome to run a business through a pandemic and keep everybody employed. Like there is a weight to that and a responsibility to that. And it would be unfair to be completely transparent about all of that and non-responsible to not let people know that there was some. Like, what's that balance? Like, yes, this is unnerving. And yes, this is hard work. And yeah, I too am scared. It depends who you are. The problem is we make these blanket statements. So if I'm talking to a CEO who never shares anything and I say, I need you to be more transparent, he or she is like, oh, okay, I got it, right? That without being binary. So the CEO is now saying, oh, okay, yeah. If I'm talking with someone who's trained like me as an actor to be transparent, like, okay, with boundaries, Hillary, right? So you have to recognize who your audience is and what does transparent mean? So recognizing that words are worlds, and it is essential for trust. Absolutely, Amy, to your point, that transparency to say what's going on, to connect, and to recognize how much is helpful and in what direction.
I love that you clarified transparency, vulnerability, and availability in context of one another. I have found in the corporate world in particular, the word transparency is overused to mean lots of different things. And I won't even get into all the things that it means. And people don't understand it because it has become so convoluted. And frankly, there are a lot of folks who view transparency as, oh, it's just another buzzword. Nobody really does it anyway. And the way you described it is beautiful. And it clarifies for people the intention of that word. And I also love that you said words are worlds. Oh, that makes me so happy. I can't even tell you.
Yeah. Cool. We respond so differently to them, right?
Yes. Yes.
The silly example, I use two examples often. One is, I love you, Amy. I like you, Amy. Right. And another one is, right, those are really different. And I didn't even add tone. I purposely have them be the same. And then the other for me is, I need to talk to you about something. I need to speak to you about something. Those two, like even speak and talk, have different, right? And then if I add tone, I need to, you know, all kinds of things. People have history with words. Yeah, sorry, you just went down. I went rabbit hole down. I'm back up now. All right.
It's perfect. It's a perfect rabbit hole. Connor, do not cut that out. So as we think about, you know, you've been on an extraordinary journey so far from having developed as an actor and really done some extraordinary things in that space. And also as a businesswoman and entrepreneur and facilitator of what I call goodness in lots of different environments. Tell me a little bit about what role celebration has played in that journey. And was there a conscious effort to focus more intently on that, particularly in the context of the last year of a pandemic?
Words are worlds. So when I hear celebration at first, I'm like, oh, we don't celebrate enough. Then I'm like, wait a minute, let me think of what that means. So every Friday, we do a little report out, all the members of the team, not a huge team, small team. And we do, what are our wins? What are our appreciations? What are we doing this weekend? And what are we doing next week? Like a quick boom, boom, boom. So the first two are about celebrating. So what are your wins this week? And then we appreciate, and it has to be someone else on the team that we're appreciating. Sometimes we appreciate clients, but we really try to stay, what's something that someone did that you appreciate, which is a win, right? It's like, I appreciated the extra help doing this or whatever it might be. And some of that is because we went virtual and we're not in touch all the time. And that has tightened up definitely during the pandemic. When I was traveling in Singapore, I had picked up a squawking chicken that we use. And it was such an amazing journey working with young entrepreneurs on how they are sharing their message. And when I brought this squawking chicken back, and we use it to celebrate. So whenever we book a new client, we squawk the chicken, and that's great. So it's like, whoa, whoa, it's hilarious. So those are celebrations. And when before the pandemic, we were really clear to go out and celebrate together and have meals together and birthdays and all that. And that has been harder. So now celebrating by dropping things off and making sure we're still doing that. And by celebrating in our virtual meetings, by doing pulse checks, checking in with each other, where are you right now? What's going on? So the celebrations in that win check-in and with each other, allowing the celebrations of it being okay wherever you are in this journey right now. It hit me in a lot of different ways. And it's different than milestones and hitting a certain milestone as a business and allowing celebrations to be little things, especially in this time.
I love that you facilitated that particularly over the last year. And I also love that throughout our chat today, you've talked about so many things that are near and dear to me. Reflection and gratitude and appreciation and celebration and exploring and saying yes and all the things. As we kind of wrap up today, how would people connect with you if they wanted to speak with you or work with you or find out more about what you're doing?
Thank you. Call. We're conversation people. So do feel free to call. Absolutely. We have our 303-868-3889 and have a conversation because that voice matters. But also there are so many ways. Please link with me on LinkedIn, find us on our website at articulaterc.com. And I'm Hillary Blair or Articulate on LinkedIn, and Hillary Blair with one L, though I think you can probably find it with two. My father, why use two when one would work? Totally from New England. And then we have a newsletter. I would love that. And we're about the verb to be present, not the adjective of executive presence, right? It's like, how do we be present with each other in conversation, in meetings, in our storytelling, in our facilitating? Yeah, if you want an eye into revealing more of yourself, helping you, because we say we don't really teach people anything. We just see you and help you get to your full, authentic, amazing self.
That's perfect. That is a perfect way to wrap this episode. Folks in the community, as you get ready to hit stop on this episode, the action I want to encourage you to take today is consider saying yes to one thing today. Trust your gut for one time today. Just one. You don't have to do it a lot. Just one. And then as you spend time in reflection, and as you think about the ahas, the oh no's, and the yippies, what have you learned and what insights have you gained and what challenges are you facing or what questions do you have and what can you celebrate? I encourage you to reflect upon exploring the tangents and listening to messages. Oftentimes, at least for me, I get so caught up in all the barrage of day-to-day life that I tend to put earmuffs on and not listen to the messages, and that can become a habit. And so in reflection today, consider maybe you need to take the earmuffs off and listen to the message. I'd love to hear what you come up with. So continue the conversation. You can find The Encourage Project on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and our new website, theencourageproject.com. And you can send me a message to hello@theencourageproject.com. So that's it for this edition, friends. Be safe, be well, and take care.